This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
TymeBank is committed to helping South Africans save what really matters. This Language Corner Decoding Digital Banking is brought to you by TymeBank. TymeBank, you've got this.
10 minutes past 11 this morning, and I'm going to be joined by different guests. Linda Abbey, I hope I said that correctly. Linda, good morning. Welcome.
Morning, that was correct.
Okay, you know, sometimes you get a bit scared. That is Head of Marketing at TymeBank. Gugu Sidaki, Director and Wealth Manager at WealthCred, is going to join us on the line. And Dr. Rakwena Munareng is also going to join us on the line as a language expert. I mean, he has worn many hats in his times and lives, but this morning joins us as a language expert to take us through on some of the things that are important. Language expert and scholar. Gugu, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Ramunareng, good morning.
Good morning, Tate. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you this morning?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm going to probably start off with Linda to take us through really some important work that they have been doing in terms of understanding what really matters to people. They've launched, probably sure you've heard in the station, some of their ads in terms of save what matters. But, you know, sometimes you may think you know what should matter to people, and then you go and do research and it sometimes confirms, or disappointedly, at times it doesn't always confirm your hypothesis. They went out and did a study that involved different types of people from different localities, and there is a bit of outcomes from that survey that they did, which was an online survey, and it tried to uncover valuable insight into what matters most to South Africans. And TymeBank conducted this online survey to reveal our greatest ambitions and the goals the nation has set at the top of their list, according to people. Linda, I'm sure you've learned a lot with that online survey in terms of what really matters to people, and perhaps it's not really what you thought you'd come out with.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So first of all, thanks again for having us on the show. I think as a brand, one of our values is authenticity. And being able to be part of a segment such as this one, which is the Language Corner, I think is a great honor for us and a great fit. So just in terms of the rationale for the Save What Matters campaign, so July in South Africa is Savings Month. And we wanted to have a campaign that would approach savings in a different manner, unlike, you know, in what you would expect or normally expect for from a bank, which is also the TymeBank way. And having said that, though, it is also important to understand the customer insights in terms of, you know, why people save, what are they saving for, and what drives that type of behavior.
Yes.
And obviously, from TymeBank, we do have a product called Goal Save, which is an immediate access product, and you can earn an interest rate of up to 8%. So coming back to the survey, we did a survey with Space Station, an online survey. And what we saw is that most South Africans, in terms of what they value, is number one, their physical, mental and emotional health. That's obviously linked to where we are right now in terms of COVID. Number two, money. And I think we can all relate, you know, to things being a little bit more tighter,
yeah.
People being retrenched, etc. And then the third one was culture, followed by community. And then also just in terms of the goals that actually matter, the financial goals
yeah.
that people are saving for. Number one was education. And education came up because people seek education as a door that unlocks access to a better life, not just for themselves, but for their children. So, for instance, one of our respondents said giving her children education is like giving them generational wealth, which is interesting. Secondly, security around buying a house And the last, the third one was creating generational wealth. So there's this theme that's emerging around saving for the future, not just for today. So our campaign, the Save What Matters campaign, is exactly that, trying to remind people in terms of their financial behavior to make sure that we pause and think about saving what matters. And I guess the question then becomes, what's the link to language? So South Africa obviously is a very beautiful and diverse country, and I think that's what's special about our country. And we've got this diversity of culture and languages, etc. And if you follow the story of Oma Katrina Esau, who is literally the last fluent speaker of the sand language known as Ngqu. And she's made it her life's mission, you know, to raise awareness around this language, etc. And if you think about that type of, you know, commitment, that type of resilience, and you compare it to the type of behavior or attitude you need to have around saving. So she's trying to save a language, and that's what matters to her. And if you shine a spotlight on that, on what has happened to that language, and you look at our own languages, and you look at what could happen if we don't do the right things around preserving culture, heritage, we could find ourselves in the same space as what Ngqu is. So it's trying to create that connection. I think it's also a nice intersection in terms of August as Women's Month. So Oma Katrina being a matriarch in her community and, you know, a spokesperson for her language. And now we're actually into Heritage Month, which is great. And that's why I'm saying it's good that, you know, we're talking about language and savings today.
Absolutely. People of Power, we are bringing you this extended language corner, decoding digital banking with Time Bank and some of my guests on the line. I want to bring in Ugugu to this conversation, director and wealth manager at Wealth Creed. Gugu, there's no doubt there's been a lot of conversation in our country as to when we talk about savings, particularly we talk from the point of, you know, finances and how to secure ourselves for the future to come. But it still seems to me either there is a problem in the language that we use, that it is not so accessible to people and it can be intimidating, or the language we use and the approach that we use does not meet people in their context, be it culturally, socioeconomically, and otherwise. What can you tell us about, you know, this need for extended financial literacy, but also motivation for saving as a people?
That's an interesting question. You know, if you look at global financial literacy rates, South Africa doesn't compare or fare too badly compared to other countries. We're more or less the same. About a third of the global population is actually financially literate. And if you look at countries like the US, for example, where they consume information in their native language, which is English, it isn't necessarily a language barrier per se. It's just that finances have not been given the spotlight that they've deserved in the past. And we're now we're seeing the consequences of that. People are not saving as much as they should be. People don't understand the difference between saving and investing. You know, there's so many different things that are a direct consequence of a lack of financial literacy that I think aren't necessarily directly attributed to a lack of understanding in terms of knowledge or language, sorry.
Perhaps, Gugu, let's also just probably decode. When we say financial literacy, what do we mean? Because, I mean, it's one thing to be literate in the sense of reading and writing, but when we talk financial literacy, it seems as if we're going a bit of a notch up.
Yeah. So we're talking about your ability to make sound or clever decisions when it comes to money matters. So do you budget? So in other words, do you plan for your money before you spend it? Do you save a portion of your money? Do you understand the difference between saving and investing? And when it comes to debt, do you understand when you need to acquire debt and when debt is actually bad? So your understanding of all of those principles is an indication of your level of financial literacy.
Now, Gugu, when something such as COVID-19 hits, I think many people get to realize, shiks, I've not been saving anything. Mm. I've been living, you know, hand to mouth or month to month. And now when the shocks come, you know, salary reductions have to happen. People have to be out of work, or people have to pause because, you know, the high, the levels of lockdown influence whether certain sectors are economically viable or not, or they can operate because of how much they attract crowds and so on. Now then people realize they are now in shock. And I suppose that's why this study that Linda is talking to us about actually shows how people were saying what they value the most now: physical, mental, and emotional health, partly because maybe they've had to deal with all the shocks that come with a pandemic that you couldn't have prepared for. Well, you could have prepared for if I'm listening well, in terms of making sound money matters. How important is it for us to take some lessons from the current point we find ourselves in to learn and be better for the future to come?
That's exactly right. Our business has actually seen a spike in people needing or requesting financial advice, which tells you that people are now more aware of the importance of being financially secure. We are meeting more and more people who are struggling with financial strain, so things like depression, eating disorders, lack of sleep, violence, divorce, so many ills that people are struggling with now, which can be directly attributed to their lack of financial wellness, which is ultimately linked to your lack of financial literacy. A lot of people are in the situation that they are in today purely because they've been unable to plan ahead in terms of their finances. So as you quite rightly said, a lot of people are living from month to month. So it means they're spending absolutely everything they've got, and a lot of people are actually overextended. So they're in debt. And the minute that income source, of that one income source that they're dependent on, is taken away, you know, it's resulted in catastrophic effects in their finances, and which is why you found a lot of people in financial ruin, which is why I think the study is so impactful. And it's actually very true that people are now realizing the importance of financial wellness, and are now actually, it's encouraging, I think, from our perspective, to see that people are seeking, you know, financial knowledge and financial advice.
I mean, Dr. Munareng, you've been listening in, and you've headed, you know, a language unit. You have participated in a number of projects in terms of the development of all our languages in the country. Google suggests that, you know, financial literacy rates are quite high in our country. But I do want to zone in, especially insofar as, you know, this idea of language and financial literacy is concerned. Have we done enough to decode, you know, the approach towards, you know, an accessible use of language that doesn't intimidate people or doesn't make them feel, I mean, sometimes when you say to someone you are in debt, it just leaves them in hell of a lot of shock and thinking they're already in trouble, they're going to be going to the credit bureau and. How do we place language in these conversations and ensure that the language use, even if we are using English, is in fact an accessible language?
It is very important. I think the key point is that we equate. It's not even, it's a weak point that we inculcate and make it quite, we reify it and make it real. We equate finances, science, education to one language, which, and when we're saying we're making the language to be accessible, the banking language or the finance language to be accessible, we are talking about what is referred to simple English, using the simple, accessible words that each Tom, Dick, and Harry can be able to access. Mm. And we're forgetting that that is not sufficient, because the people that are generating, are working in finance most of the time every day, are the people who speak languages other than English. Mm. And that's where we are supposed to come in. That's where we're going to get into the kindergarten's curriculum and make sure that we talk about issues related to finance in the language that they speak. And as they grow old, they can conceptualize finances from that background that they have learned from the beginning when they started their kindergarten. And as you put in the element of English here and there, then they obviously are inculcated in the principle of dealing with finances. The key point, as I mentioned, is that we should not equate finance, science, or education or knowledge with one language, because it is merely a concept. that can be carried out in any other languages.
And I suppose, Dr. Munareng, you are aware in the scholastic community, there's always this, you know, over protection and prizing of the jargon of the field, you know. How do we move beyond these barriers, you know, of the jargon of the field and really, you know, make sure that all aspects of education are as accessible to people as possible?
That's where the element of translating and transliteration comes to place, where we're going to get concepts. We do have concepts, but we need to get terms that captures the concept. And when it captures the concept in the language that the person speaks, or indigenous languages, that is where you're getting into the core. And you are going to be able to talk to everybody in a simple way to understand that these concepts are not complicated. You know, if you start using bombastic words, you're trying to show off that you are being intelligent and to move away from the common people. But when you're using the language that everybody can accept, the diction, the words, choice of words becomes important, and if it is done in the language that is spoken by all of us, by particularly by indigenous speakers, then it's making quite easy. Look, business, if you count how many we are in South Africa,
yes,
and people that are generating money, you can go to the taxi business where they are generating some money that is sufficient, that is very good for economy. You don't find anybody speaking English in there. They're speaking their own languages. Why do we basically relegate the use of this language, or the use to value that language at that level, instead of getting that into the real core of running business? And I think that is very much important. We just need to acknowledge that these languages need to be given value, space to perform. And if it's given space to perform, it will do almost everything. The same way as English, it never started as a language. It started as a kind of a vernacular, a dialect. It's a mixture of different kind of languages. The only thing is that it was given colonial investment and financial investment for decades, and it has dominated, inculcated into our conscious way. We think that everything that we do has to be done through this medium.
And I suppose,
the key important aspect, again, is make this language to get the space to perform.
And I suppose, Dr. Munareng, this is why the concepts of, you know, interdisciplinarity or multidisciplinarity become important, to actually put on a round table people who would not ordinarily be in the same space, language experts, you know, wealth managers, marketing heads from, you know, the financial services, and really start to bring about a sharing of ideas in how to unlock some of these problems that we are confronted with in making, you know, this financial literacy accessible.
It's very important. Look at how Euro has dominated Europe, and particularly it's basically a world currency. People that meet together in the European Union do not speak only in one language.
Yes.
And when they talk about transaction, the transaction is not done through one language. It is done through several languages that are represented within the European Union. Imagine what would happen if we have taken this within our own continent, which is Africa, and make sure that the languages are given value through the platform that we'll offer when we deal with matters of finances. We are basically tendering our own timber and making sure that these languages have got impact in the world. I'll take you back a little bit while ago, when the advertisements that were so popular were heard only through the medium of radio stations or the voice of the radio. You remember Peter Stuyvesant?
Yep.
You remember the advert for Peter Stuyvesant? You compare that with Coke and Pepsi when they were done in indigenous languages. And you can imagine how many people just flocked to buy those concepts because of the diction of the words that are particularly there in this African language that were used to cajole people to buy those products. They have been working quite a lot. I don't know where we have missed it. I think missing it is a question of having inferiority complex, that we think we cannot do anything better than the West or than the Europeans. And anything that buys and that sells that has got a big of cachet has to be done through one medium. Look at what happens with praying. Simple praying. People feel that it is insufficient to pray gasosuthor gaspos. How tantas are gaspos? You're thinking what you think.
Tantas also fee, kaku Jesus.
And what is even worse is that castetal is nyanya ekaya.
Yes.
What happens? Do we singene shante, petechuala, amato dance any payan, but it's a gaspos.
Dr. Munareng, you're leaving. I really hope you didn't have to leave us shortly for this conversation, because you are just heating up now and you know warming us up. But thank you so much, Dr. Rakwena Munareng, for sharing some of those insights with us.
Thank you very much, Power FM.
Thank you. That's former head of language unit at UJ and also at some point at the helm of PANSLAB, Dr. Rakwena Munareng, saying, you know, some people think that asivakali when you tandaza in isiXhosa. Language corner, decoding digital banking. Yar. Language corner, decoding digital banking this morning with Time Bank. My guests are Linda Appi and Gugu Sidaki. We will continue with them after Power News headlines.
Time Bank is committed to helping South Africans save what really matters. This language corner, decoding digital banking, is brought to you by Time Bank. Time Bank, you've got this.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mguni. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, we invite your calls on this language corner, decoding digital banking with Time Bank. Please do dial in on 0861-987-000 on the Twitter streets, of course, at Lukhona Mguni. Hashtag Power Talk at Power FM 987 is where you can also find us on those Twitter streets. Hashtag Power Talk, so that we just identify your tweets nice and easy. I mean, okay, my guests, Linda Appi, head of marketing at Time Bank, Gugu Sidaki, director and wealth manager at Wealth Creed. We've had to let go of Dr. Munareng. He has another commitment. But I mean, Linda, you were listening, and you know, as Gugu and Dr. Munareng were talking, taking some notes in terms of how do you really collaborate to make sure that, you know, especially this new phenomenon of digital banking, which doesn't necessarily involve, you know, walking into branches, interacting with tellers, as we used to know. If you don't find joy with the teller, you go to inquiries. Mm. How do you make sure that digital banking, especially in a country like ours, where we are still fighting for issues of data, you know, data must fall and all of that, that it is made as accessible and as readily available to people?
No, very, very good point. And I think those were some of the barriers or challenges that we had to deal with, especially when launching the bank, and also influenced how we showed up as a bank. So, for instance, you know, you can open a Time Bank account at any of our kiosks at Pick n Pay or Boxer. So that in itself, I think, is a different concept in terms of access. So giving people banking where they shop, number one. Number two, the fact that the kiosk itself is a digital one, in the sense that it allows you to open an account in 5 minutes. And the reason for that is because it is connected to the HANA system, so the Home Affairs system. So you are actually able to verify or do your FICA verification as you apply for the account. You can also RICA, by the way, at the kiosk. And what we noticed is that, yes, we've got the kiosks. Yes, there's this, you know, revolutionary tech that you know, people can engage with, but it's still intimidating. And that then led to the introduction of the ambassadors, which we spoke about off air. So those young ladies and young men who stand there. And the reason for having them there is actually to have that human interface or human interaction.
Yeah.
Because I think even if you go to an ATM or even when you're using a cell phone, people still get intimidated that, you know, they might press the wrong button. Will this thing work? Will it do what it needs to do? And that's what the ambassadors are there for. And what's important about the ambassadors is that, again, in terms of trying to remove a barrier around familiarity and allowing people to approach them, is that we actually recruit them from the communities in which the stores or kiosks are located. And the ambassadors, I know there was talk earlier around, you know, people who work in financial services don't just speak English. So the ambassadors can help you in any language that obviously they speak, and that's important. And then also just from a Time Bank point of view, in terms of our advertising, we learned some lessons early on around, yes, we can show up in English, but the second most spoken language in South Africa is Zulu. And, you know, what we're trying to do is demystify not just digital banking, but banking in terms of making it simple, right? And that's why in terms of our advertising, we were one of the first banks to bring in VNAC. So if you go on our website, there's a lot of South Africanisms, a lot of colloquialisms. And that was really the rationale in terms of making banking relatable, but also not making it formal, so such that it's intimidating to people. So one of the things that we've worked on actually is a language glossary, looking at terms that, you know, are hard to understand. I think financial services, banking, insurance, medical aid, you know, we can view them to some extent as grudge purchases because it's things that we need in our lives. But also we don't want, you know, people to have nasty surprises. And we think, you know, as part of our mission around financial inclusion and financial empowerment, making your financial health better, it is important for people to understand what it is that they're dealing with. And, you know, we look at our social media stats. We get a lot of queries around, you know, terms like USSD, EFD, EFT, etc. And that was part of the rationale for putting that glossary online, where we've translated quite a few of the terms into other languages.
Yeah.
And if you know, call our call center, you can engage with them in various languages. We even did some work on an SMS platform called Juntos, where it wasn't just, you know, about engaging with customers in English, but Zulu as well. And soon we'll be launching an online bot called Temba, which is great because Temba means trust.
Okay.
And we recognize the work we have to do, excuse me, which is around building trust.
Yeah.
So I think just, you know, as a point of departure, I think it is fair to say that, you know, as a financial services industry, we do have a responsibility collectively to make banking more accessible and easier to understand. And that's something that I think even the Banking Association of South Africa has pushed in terms of, you know, the various stakeholders. And this is something that we take seriously. Hence, you know, engagements such as this one today, not just, you know, engaging with English radio stations, but VNAC or community radio stations, and also making sure that our adverts are translated into other languages, and even looking at the insight for our latest campaign, which is using you know, someone that I think we can all relate to, you know, Iskoko.
Yeah.
So that's somebody that normally Ekasi, a lot of people can look up to. You know, he's the guy that inspires you, etc. But our guy, he's not just, you know, Iskoko of anything, but he's Iskoko of money. He's cash clever, he's money wise. And you know, you see him in scenarios where he interrupts people and he gives them financial advice. So I think this is, we're on a journey, and you know, we're taking some steps to get there.
Niyezwa ukuthi uThemba useyeza ke uzonitshela ukuthi nizoba isikhokho zemali kanjani, a bot coming up there that will help you interface and interact even much more on this world of digital banking. This is Language Corner, decoding digital banking. I've got Gugu Sidaki, director and wealth manager at WealthCreed. Gugu, I want to come back to you before I go to that line, 0861987000. One of the things that we are now seeing, Gugu, is an evolution of the mechanisms with which people can save. So people who were unbanked many, many years ago would probably rely on some stock fails or some umgalelo, you know, where, you know, you just collect money this month, it goes to Gugu, next month it goes to Lukona, that month Banyana, and so on. And now there's been a great evolution, huge choices in your baskets as to what people can take up. How would you say, Gugu, you are finding, you know, the uptake of the new products that are there in the market and the ease at which they are being advertised to people? And I ask this because, you know, when you drive around the suburban areas of your Sandton, Rosebank, Houghton, where we are, you'll probably find a lot of billboards from various fund managers, and you don't necessarily find these billboards if you go to township areas or rural towns.
Such an interesting question. We definitely have seen a lot of innovation in the financial sector in the last couple of years, and innovation a lot of the time speaks to demand from consumers, which I think is a good thing. The reason why we're seeing so many different products, so much availability of different kinds of products and services in the financial sector is that the sector or the industry is realizing that they need to meet people where they are with products that they understand. So I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. It also speaks to inclusion. Right. So I think we want to bring in as many people as possible into the world of finance, because, as you know, the more people interact or interface with financial products and services, the higher the probability of them actually putting money away and engaging in positive financial behavior and ultimately achieving financial success, which ultimately is better for the country at large. So I think innovation is great, but I think people do need to be extra careful when taking up new products, because it doesn't necessarily mean that every product that's available out there or accessible to you is what you should be taking on. I think people still need to be well aware of the terms and conditions, what's involved with those financial products, what your responsibility is as a consumer of that product or service, so that it ultimately works better for you in the long run. But I think innovation, in a nutshell, I think is great because, as I said, it speaks to the needs of the people.
Whose duty is it, Gugu, though, to broker this innovation to people? And I'm asking here because, you know, some of us may be used to a particular certain products. I know when I was growing up in the 90s, our parents were taking a lot of your group schemes and type of things, burial and don. And now there's been a great gravitation and moves to make life cover much more affordable at quite reasonable, you know, payout rates. Of course, there are terms and conditions. Some are much more long-term issues. You can no longer draw down on some of these investments as you used to, where you could loan out from your own investment and repay back. It's part of this evolution that you're talking about, but it's quite a complex set of evolution. Whose responsibility is it to probably try and, you know, decode? I'm sure, I mean, we're trying to achieve that now in this moment, but I'm certain that there are much more other accessible places. Dr. Munareng was talking about, you know, the entire ecosystem that is an economy in a taxi rank, and you get all sorts of products and, you know, movements of money that are flowing in those ecosystems. How do you penetrate such ecosystems so that people can actually realize greater value for their productivity?
I think it's twofold. I think the industry has a massive obligation and responsibility to create products that speak to the consumer. I mean, that's why the industry is there and it exists, over and above profitability. But I also think that the consumer, as a consumer, it's our responsibility to push back on the industry, to engage the financial services sector, to let them know what works for us, what our requirements, what our needs are, and then leave it to them to respond to that. But I think gone are the days where we are just passively taking in or consuming, you know, products or services and hope for the best. You know, in this world of tech, in this world of information, the information flows quite quickly and quite freely from consumer to the financial sector or whatever sector there is out there. So I think we need to take advantage of that as consumers, and we need to push back a lot more, because I find in a lot of instances, and I do see it with certain clients as well, that we tend to be very passive when it comes to what we consume and the products that we take in. And you have no idea the power that you have as a consumer and the voice the weight that your voice holds or has when you speak out. So, and I mean, that's exactly why we have all of this innovation in the first place, is because people are pushing back and people are requesting products that they need and that they want from the industry. So it is twofold. It's from us, the consumer, and also from the financial services sector. And also, there's nothing stopping, and we're seeing that a lot as well, there's nothing stopping you as the consumer from innovating and coming up with products that will speak to what you need in your community.
And I mean, that consumer agency you're talking about, Gugu, has become so important in the contemporary times because we're no longer waiting for that salesperson to come and give us a pitch at the workplace. In fact, you probably scoff them off when they try to stop you entering a mall because you're in such a hurry and you've got so much you want to do. We now have to actually be plugged in and be more intentional in chasing these products. But there's also just such a vast array of things, and also there's a lot of mischief going on in the cyber world, isn't it?
That is very true, and that's why you need to keep your wits about you as a consumer. Not everybody who's out there is for you, and it is also your responsibility to keep your eyes wide open and to read and to educate yourself so that when something is amiss or when something is fraudulent, you're able to pick it up quite quickly.
Absolutely. People of Power, this is Language Corner, Decoding Digital Banking. I've got my guest, Linda Abbey, Head of Marketing at Time Bank, Gugu Sidaki, Director and Wealth Manager at Wealth Creed. 0861-987-000 is the dial. Malesa in Tembisa, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Lukona, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you this morning?
Super, super.
Number one.
A quick question. Let me put it this way. There was this financial advisor who said, is it advisable for an ordinary person to buy shares, right? He was giving an example saying in certain organizations, their shares, they were like 5 rand a few years back. Now they are like over 1,000 rand. Now, I want to inquire about the Time Bank shares because he said they were like 450. So I want to know where can I get them, or if there's an app for me to get it, or can I just walk in the JSE and say I want to buy Time Bank shares with a certain amount? Like, how do I go about it?
Okay, I'll put that to my guests. Thank you so much. Ngiyabona wena usufuna nje umnotho, ufuna ukuyithathela umnetho, ufuna ukubuka umnotho abanye abantu bedlala ngawo. Ufuna isinokonoko wena Malisa. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to find out from the Time Bank what are the actually strategy towards actually introducing financial literacy to primary to at a small level at the primary school level. I'll tell the reason why I'm actually asking this question, because I've got my son that didn't actually know that. He said that he wants to make money, and then I said, now, don't you want to build wealth? And then we started arguing about money and wealth, what's the difference? So I was saying that, is there anything in pipeline on Time Bank to actually can convince or start now putting this information to people to can encourage them, particularly for saving purposes?
Stephen?
I have actually encouraged my brother. He bought his own PSC because I said to him, every time when I give you 100 rand, you save 10% of that, and then that's how he's actually doing that.
Okay, Stephen, got you loud and clear. Linda, I was fortunate when growing up. I started a business with 10 rands in the 90s, bought a pack of sweets. There were 144 inside, sold them for 10 cents. The rest is history. But, I mean, how do we... That was probably by a stroke of luck, right? And it taught me a lot about making financial decisions and choices. But how do we make sure that it is not just a stroke of luck for young people at that level, in the primary level, to have access to financial literacy?
Yeah, so I think for now, I'll be honest with you, we haven't really focused on financial literacy at a primary school level yet. And also for the account, in terms of being able to open the account, you have to be 18 years or older.
Yes.
However, I think there's a lot in what Gugu said earlier around the customer being active and you know, gaining knowledge around financial literacy, etc. And I think even people from a young age, right? And we're living in this digital age where young people have access to cell phones. There's a rise in social media usage. They can go online. So, for instance, going to our website, www.timebank.co.za, we do have a content hub where on a weekly basis we share financial tips financial literacy tips, etc., and articles. And also we boost those or we share those on our social media platforms as well. So I think it's in training those youngsters. So they are ready, you know, obviously when they're 18 to open that Time Bank account. And I think it's a great account for young people, yeah. especially. Zero monthly fees. I spoke about Goal Save earlier, and you can download it on your app. And as we know, even me, I have a young son. He's the one who really, even for my mother and I, who helps us, you know, download apps and things like that. Talking about the second question, which is about how to buy shares.
No, shares.
Yeah. and it's quite interesting. Our parent company, African Rainbow Capital, actually released their financial results yesterday. So there's been quite a bit of interest around this topic. Time Bank itself, we are not a listed company. So we are part of, you know, African Rainbow Capital.
Yes.
That's our majority shareholder. So the best way for people to participate within Time Bank is by buying shares in ARC. And I think, you know, Time Bank's performance is one to watch. You know, the figures yesterday said we had 3.5 million customers. We're actually at 3.7 million customers.
Okay.
And, you know, we are aiming to break even by June next year. So for a bank that was launched in February 2019, just under 2.5 years old, I think, you know, we're on the right path. If anything, our focus internally, even, you know, with platforms such as this, is around taking the bank to the next level. And how do we grow? We know the bank has disrupted the banking industry, but I think that's great because it's forced other banks, you know, to take notice of perhaps what was a neglected sector, which is the underserved, the underbanked. And by the way, people who may initially not have been thought to fall within our target market. So there are people who, you know, have migrated down due to economic pressures, who are really looking for value, which is what, you know, Kantar, the research company, is also saying. People are looking for better deals, better value. And people are saying maybe a private banker or having a private wealth account is not worth it. I need to simplify my life, and what are the expenses that I can control? And even, you know, part of the research is showing, you know, around trying to save and earn more money, people are starting side hustles. And we've got an SME account as well, which offers the same value in terms of no monthly fees and all of that. So I would encourage people, you know, to check us out.
Yeah.
On our website, as I've mentioned, and on our app, which is available on Google, the Google app, App Store, the Huawei Store, as well as the iOS App Store.
Just quickly before I go back to Google, Smoo Pakati tweets me and says, let me ask you, will you ever simplify the deposit method used at the till points, because the current one of generating a code on the app is an unnecessary hassle?
Okay. I think that's a fair point. You know, we welcome feedback. And, you know, that's something that we definitely can look into.
Okay. Google, let me just come back to you on this financial literacy for young people. I mean, I'm looking at myself. Back in those days when I was in primary school, I had an account with Post Bank, and that's where I was banking my money. It was held in my name. And you're seeing young people making more decisions, independent decisions on their own. They get quite a bit of pocket money in some households, and they may want at a very young age to start being independent in the choices that they make. They are on your YouTube Kids, they are on these other various platforms where they get to access information. Do you think it's about time to probably focus for the long-term future of you know, financial literacy on young people also being able to open up their own products and not necessarily being represented by their guardians or parents?
Look, I think it's been time for a very long time to focus on children, because if you read a lot of the research that's available out there, the suggestion is that children's financial habits or their concepts around financial habits have formed by the time they're seven. So already by that age, they have an idea of you know, things like delayed gratification, overspending, underspending, and things like that. So the sooner you capture them and the sooner you start educating them around matters of personal finance, the better, because we're experiencing it now where we're educate or trying to help adults change their financial behaviors or financial habits. It's a lot harder to change a habit than it is to learn a new one. So rather start them as early as possible, teaching them new habits, and so that will set them off for the rest of their lives. There is material that's available online, but unfortunately it's not legislated. So in other words, you can't access this information through schools just yet. So you as the parent then become, you know, the standard. It then becomes your responsibility. So in other words, you need to educate yourself. You yourself need to be financially literate. You need to understand that your behavior with money, the things that you say, the things that you don't say in front of your children have a direct impact on them and their money. And then from there, we're then able to change the status quo for young people going forward. Absolutely. But you are the standard, and that's what adults need to remember. You are the standard. You shape their views and their behaviors around money. So you need to be very careful about that.
Gugu, thank you so much for your time and patience this morning.
Thank you, Lukona. Nice chatting.
Lovely. Gugu Sidaki, Director and Wealth Manager, Wealth Creed. Linda Abbey, thank you so much as well for joining us this morning, kicking off this Language Corner, Decoding Digital Banking. I know that people of power can also look forward to that glossary of terms in the banking sector, which we will be, you know, going through as time goes by over the next now 3 weeks, and we will make sure that they get some translations as well. So thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Lukana. Thanks for having us.
Save what matters when you open an account with Time Bank today. This Language Corner Decoding Digital Banking was brought to you by Time Bank. Time Bank, you've got this.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.